What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer. And in this episode, it's time to strap back on the web shooters and prepare to be greater together in my review of Spider-Man 2. Before we jump into the details of this game's story, let's take a few minutes to talk about some details that you may not have known about the game or its developer in The Breakdown. As many of you listeners may know, Venom plays a massive role in Spider-Man 2, and if you're a fan of the comic books and the origins of the character of Venom and the symbiote that forms Venom, then you'll know that a big thing that may be contrasting as you play through Spider-Man 2, and you'll notice, is that Venom does not actually have a weakness to fire in this game. So if you're like me, you may be playing the game saying, wait a minute, that's one of his major weaknesses. Obviously, high-frequency sound, but also fire. That's like his Achilles heel is fire. So looking into it, I found out that that was a purposeful decision by Insomniac and the creative director. And the reason why is because there was a list of different weaknesses they had for the character that are known through the comics, but they wanted to kind of simplify things for the gaming standpoint and from a gameplay perspective, as well as kind of make it their own for their gamer universe. If you didn't know, the Gamerverse is kind of its own universe of Marvel characters in a way, and that means that Insomniac has the liberty to kind of mold and shape any of the characters that it introduces in these games to its discretion. So when it came to Venom, that is one thing they decided to do and to make their own is by eliminating one of his weaknesses, one of the most well-known weaknesses of Venom, which is that of fire. Now let's go check out the details of this game's story. When discussing the story of Spider-Man 2, I feel like we have to start with really the main themes, or what I would consider the main themes of this game, and that is friendship and love. Now, maybe the friendship part, but the love, you might be kind of raising your eyebrow to it saying, man, I don't know, it's a Spider-Man game. We're talking about love here. Well, if you play through the entirety of the game, and even you don't have to play through the entirety of the game to see it, but let me just say that it is definitely a prevalent theme throughout the course of this game. And if you think about it, you look back at the last two games in the series, Spider-Man 2018, Spider-Man Miles Morales, every game in this series has definitely had a major focus around the feeling and the emotion of love. Now, in this game, we do start off after the events of those first two games that I mentioned, and we see both Peter and Miles very much in their bag, if you will, to use some sports analogies here. They are very much in their bag as far as the roles they are representing as the Spider-Men of New York. They've formed a very good partnership, and I mean, look, in the last couple of games, especially in the first game, you know, Miles obviously first learns how to be Spider-Man, and he's still learning in Miles Morales Spider-Man. By the time we get to them in this game, I feel like he's pretty much coming to his own, and he doesn't necessarily need a whole lot of training, per se, from Peter anymore. And it shows. I mean, there's many different sequences throughout the course of the game where you just go back, kind of bounce back and forth between Peter and Miles, and Miles is very much right up there with Peter at this point. So we see them and they're kind of thrown into the mix, or we are as the player with them as well. And it's all about this massive citywide attack being implemented by none other than the Sandman, Flint Marko himself. And honestly, I thought this was a very epic way to introduce players to the game and the game's storyline. And it's very interesting to come out of the beginning of this game and this sequence of events with Sandman, and kind of really both Spider-Man and the players are all kind of like, you know what? What is going on? Like, what would make Flint do this? Like, Sandman was just kind of going nuts. And it's that path that kind of sets Miles and Peter down the road that we will follow throughout the entirety of the game at that point. Now, obviously, if you've seen the trailers, you know that two big bads, obviously, I've already mentioned Venom in the previous segment, but also Kraven the Hunter. Honestly, one of my favorite Spider-Man villains from the comics. I've always appreciated him as a villain and thought he has a lot to bring as far as from a story perspective and just a uniqueness about him. He's not some kind of super-powered, costumed, crazy guy. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's kind of crazy in his own way, but there's just something unique about him and something I always appreciated about any storyline that he was involved in as far as the comics are concerned. Now, when it comes to this game, let me just say, we'll talk about characters throughout the course of this segment, and Kraven as a characterization that Insomniac has done, oh man, he is great. He plays the role perfectly, and at the beginning of the game, you know, we kind of segue from Peter and Miles and Sandman, we kind of segue over to Kraven, and we learn his inspiration for coming to New York City, because if you didn't know, Kraven is all about hunting and being out in the jungle and the savannas of Africa and just really finding a challenge. And that challenge for him has been always about man versus beast and man being able to overcome the beast. Well, he's kind of gotten bored with just your normal run-of-the-mill animals at this point, and he wants a real challenge. So when he's brought to him a list of different villains, the supervillains that Spidey has just taken out in the previous Spider-Man game in Spider-Man 2018, villains like Vulture and Mr. Negative and Scorpion, these kinds of villains, he sees these and says, wow, now this could be a real fun challenge. And that is what kind of drives him to New York and is going to ultimately set up his meeting of Miles and Peter. Now, there are other things that happen that are going on here. I'm not going to go into every little detail of everything. Obviously, I want you guys to explore and enjoy this story naturally as you are progressing throughout the course of the game. So I'll stay away from spoilers as well. But let me just say that, you know, we'll start with characters and the specifics of what the characters are in this game and how Insomniac has really just made, in my opinion, arguably some of the best interpretations of these characters, even more so than some of the comics. So, I mean, obviously, Peter Parker, the classic OG Spider-Man, you know, just amazing job in this game as far as a character standpoint. You know, the black suit is always prevalent when Venom is involved, so I'm not going to tell you how or exactly what all happens there, but let's just say that the character arc that Peter goes on throughout this journey is an amazing one. He starts out pretty much where he has always been, as we've seen him in this Insomniac series, and the roller coaster ride that he takes of emotions and just everything throughout the course of this game is just pretty insane. And to see him where he ends up at the end of the game, I mean, man, it was just beautifully, beautifully written. Insomniac has just done a great job with his character. And as we move into Miles and what's happened with him, I mean, just his character growth from just a kid in Spider-Man 2018 through the growing pains that he had in his own game to now seeing how he's matured and where he's at in his life, both personally and as Spider-Man. Now, obviously, both Spider-Men have their friends, their complementary partners as well. You know, you have Mary Jane Watson, who is, of course, with Peter Parker, and you have Haley, who is a great complement to Miles. Haley is actually deaf, and I think that that was just an amazing thing to add her into, to add that aspect of her into this game and to have that representation there. And to have the player in multiple situations kind of understand as best you can, as someone who's not deaf, but being able to try to empathize and realize, you know, certain things that she goes through. So I thought that was great. And she's a great character. She's a graffiti artist. I mean, there's just a lot of, I would say, depth that has been added to her character as well throughout the course of this game. But seeing Miles and Genki, who is his best friend, and obviously Genki is there to help you as Miles and Peter with the Friendly Neighborhood app, that is where you get a lot of different notifications from New York citizens saying, hey, this bad thing is happening, can you help us out? And then you can go and help out. Well, Genki's there, Mary Jane's there, Haley is there. Well, returning in this game, or really I should say not returning, he's returning from a visual, just you know, seeing and observing standpoint, because as the player, we got to see Harry Osborn, both at the end of Spider-Man 2018 as well as in Miles Morales. But Harry, as a full-fledged character, makes an appearance in this game finally, and he is a main character, the best friend of Peter Parker. And man, you can see it. I mean, you can just see the love these two have for each other as friends. and the different things that they go through throughout the course, I would say, of the first half of the game. That first half of this game is just, man, it really sets the tone for that relationship between Peter and Harry, and even between Harry and his father, Norman Osborn, who comic book fans, most fans of Spider-Man will know, is supposed to eventually one day or someday become a Green Goblin, because, you know, there's multiple people who take on the mantle of Green Goblin, whether Insomniac decides in their Gamerverse to make Norman Osborn a Green Goblin or not. That remains to be seen. I cannot wait personally to see who takes up the mantle of Green Goblin in the future. But as we see Harry Osborn enter the picture, he's not just a two-dimensional character, a best friend. I mean, man, there is such a great history between him and Peter that, as the player, the experience that Insomniac has given to us to have with these two in their earlier years, the writing, I can't say enough about the writing in this game and the dialogue, the scenarios that play out from that, and just, oh man, Insomniac really, really gets you invested in this friendship. Let's just say that. Now, as the game progresses, obviously things happen. If you have played the previous games, then you'll know, so I don't consider this a spoiler, that the symbiote is ultimately what is keeping Harry alive. He was dying of a same kind of a cancerous type traumatic disease that killed his mother, and Norman was not about to let this happen to his own son, and so he sought other means, which brought in Dr. Kurt Connors, aka the Lizard. Now, through the process of all kinds of different things, they came to the symbiote, and let's just say that that is currently at the beginning of the game, where we find the symbiote attached to Harry, keeping him alive, very healthy. And man, just going from that point forward, let's just say there's a lot of great story beats. There is a lot of great side stories in this game. There is so many cool side activities that you can do, and a lot of them have just really good stories, very emotional stories. There was a couple of them that almost brought a tear to my eye, to be honest with you, and they were just about really random citizens in New York. So you have great side missions that have great stories. You have the character development of all the characters in this game and the character arcs that they've taken over the course of the series. It's just so awesome to see them grow. Introduction of new characters. Villains have a lot of different storylines here. You know, Sandman, I mentioned earlier, there's a really touching storyline and backstory as to why he got to where he did at the beginning of the game. And Mysterio, there's a storyline involving him that was actually really impressive. There is just so much really good stuff going on here. One of my favorite side activities and side stories that played in the background was that of the Flame and the cult that follows the Flame. And I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but let's just say the payoff was well worth it. I thought that it was exactly what I expected it to be. And let's just say there's a lot of characters and a specific character that makes an appearance or is at least going to make an appearance eventually in this series that I cannot wait for. So Insomniac, I mean, they did a phenomenal job of pacing. I felt that the game was absolutely perfectly paced when it came to the story. I mean, you always had just this kind of slow, mellow, but good and calm, you know, series of moments. And then it would just ramp up immediately and just go from 1 to 10 just with the snap of a finger. And there would just be this intensity and this raised level of emotion and just all kinds of stuff going on. And things would kind of taper off and then you would mellow out again. And then boom, they would hit you with it again and kind of, you know, left hook you kind of unexpectedly in certain moments. But I really can't say enough about the story in this game. I don't want to go too much more into detail without the risk of spoilers. So let's just say my overall thoughts are that Insomniac knocked it out of the park with this story. I can't think of any better way to have told the story they did in the way that they did. And I mean, this is arguably one of my favorite Spider-Man stories ever in any medium, whether it's movies, TV shows, comics, it doesn't matter. The story is that good. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. So if you're in the mood for a great story, an emotional one, an action-packed one, just a really gripping, funny at times as well story, then, I mean, look no further than Spider-Man 2, because literally every note that you want hit is going to be covered in this game and in its story. So absolutely excellent story. Great job, Insomniac. That's my thoughts on it. Now let's go see what my thoughts are on the game's graphics and sound. As As we now move on to discussing the graphics and sound in Spider-Man 2, first off, I'm going to start with the visuals. Now, visuals, I kind of break up into different categories, and the first category I want to cover are the character models. Now, if you played the first Spider-Man game, even on PS4, I mean, that was a gorgeous, phenomenal-looking game. Then we move on to Miles Morales, and whether you're playing PS4, especially if you're playing the PS5 version, again, the game was just absolutely gorgeous. The attention to detail that Insomniac puts into its games is bar none, to be honest. And it's no different in Spider-Man 2. I mean, this game is built from the ground up for the PS5 to take advantage of all of its hardware capabilities, and that really shines through in the visuals for the most part. Now, I'll just talk about first the actual just aesthetics of everything. So character models, man, I mean, they are absolutely gorgeous. They are extremely well detailed. They have just absolute great animations to them. All the facial animation and lip syncing with the voice acting, I mean, everything is top notch and done really, really well. I can't complain about anything there. One of the things that I love about the details that we're talking about here that Insomniac does is the amount of detail that they put into the suits that both Peter and Miles wear throughout the game. Every single suit is so detailed, like right down to the itty-bittiest little texture. I mean, it's just amazing when you really go into photo mode and you zoom in on all these different costumes. I mean, they look amazing. And there's no pun intended there. I mean, it's just straight up. It just looks awesome. So the level of detail in these suits, I mean, just being able to see the ridges and seeing where the web shooters are and the way they look and the soles of the shoes that they're wearing, I mean, just, it is absolutely amazing. Not only that, it's not just the base aesthetics of the game, but Insomniac, just like they have done in the past, they do some really cool stuff with the visuals and the fact that if you've watched or know of the Into the Spider-Verse movies, there's a certain animation style that those movies have, and it's replicated in these games when you're wearing those suits that are based on those movies. So it's no different here, and it just looks really cool. There's also a noir filter that you can do for the noir costume for Peter, and that also looks really good. There's just a lot of really cool stuff that you can do within the visuals of the game. So I absolutely love what they've done with the character models, the details, the animations, everything. Now, when we talk about even the villains and the enemies as far as character models, I absolutely loved the differentiation that they gave to the cannon fodder, is what I typically call just your basic set of enemies in any game. And in this game, it's no different. I mean, they're very distinguishable of the different types of villains or enemies they're tied to. Obviously, Kraven is the main bad in here, and he's got all kinds of different animal-themed or fur-wearing themed enemies that are tied to him, that when you get into groups of enemies, they're all wearing that kind of same similar style of cosmetic. Well, it's the same thing when you look at the Flame and the cult that the Flame follows. I mean, there's just unique wardrobes and whatnot to all these different factions. And I love that. Even just when regular street crimes, there's just, you know, regular people in tank tops or polos or whatever. I mean, it's very differentiated. And I loved and appreciated that about what Insomniac did there, because I mean, you could just have the same generic kind of looking enemies all throughout and probably nobody would have particularly batted an eye. But the fact that they tried to make it different for each type of enemy or each faction they were related to, I thought was great. Now, the environments that these enemies and these main characters play in, the environments are awesome as well. I mean, the New York City is the main environment, right? I mean, obviously, what is Spider-Man without New York City? What is a Spider-Man game without New York City? Sure, you know, you have games in the past like Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions, Edge of Time, I mean, where you're going all over the place. But that makes sense in a more linear experience. But if you're trying to do like an open world, kind of a hub world type setting, like these games are, it makes perfect sense to put it in New York City. And I personally don't want my Spider-Man game anywhere else but New York City, because there is so much that you could do just with that one city, because there's so many boroughs and different areas that you can explore, underground, above ground, skyscrapers, you know, just there is so much that you can do with New York City if you just kind of pace yourself, which Insomniac has done so far, because we still haven't gotten all of New York City and its boroughs to this point through three different games. So I think that's awesome. But the visual style of New York City in this game, even though it's the third game with New York City, City as the main primary location, it's so different than the last two games. I talked about in my Captain's Quarters episodes how I loved the each game and the previous two, and now this one. They're all set in a different time of year. So Insomniac can use that to their advantage and differentiate each game's feel and ambiance from the last. So in the first game, it kind of took place, I would say, probably in the summertime. You know, you just have your normal blue skies and kind of a night-day cycle thing going on. You know, nothing too crazy there. But then you go to Miles Morales' Spider-Man, and man, it was amazing. I loved the differentiation from it in Spider-Man 2018 because it was set right around Christmas time. So you had the holiday season going on, the winter months. You had snow that was, you know, snow-capped streets that was maybe off to the side where it had been plowed or on tops of roofs. And, you know, you saw the heat, like the steam and the smoke coming out of different vents because the heat was working. Snow would come every now and then and just kind of fall as you're swinging through New York City. And it felt cold. You also had the holiday decorations everywhere. It felt like Christmas and winter, and the clothing that the characters wore. It was, you know, jackets and sweaters and scarves and all these different things. So it just made itself feel so much unique from 2018 Spider-Man. And it's the same thing here in Spider-Man 2. It's set in the month of October, and it's autumn, fall, right? So all the trees, their leaves and the grass and everything is all kind of like a brownish fall color. You have orange leaves and red leaves and different areas where you go. Like as you're going through Central Park, you can see how different everything is and just tell that it's fall by looking at that. You have the leaves that are falling as you go through some of these forested areas. And then just something about the sun in this game, I really felt like it just felt like fall, like a fall sunset or sunrise, or just there was something kind of orangish and warm about its glow. And I get it, it's a sun, but I don't know how to explain it or put it into words other than that, because it felt like fall as you're going through when that sun is right there, because it's beautiful. And we'll go into lighting right now because that's a perfect segue. The lighting in this game is phenomenal. The sun, as I've already been talking about, I mean, just the way it reflects off of the windows and skyscrapers of the buildings, the way it reflects off of characters and the water of the Hudson River, the ponds and lakes and Central Park, and just all these different areas, the reflections of natural lighting is absolutely amazing. And then when you're going through the more linear interior environments of the game, the lighting also works really, really well here. And it just the way it casts shadows and just emphasizes certain things within the environment. I mean, Insomniac just did an amazing job with the lighting here as well. So obviously, on top of that, you have, you know, other aspects of the exterior of New York City. Obviously, just so many different landmarks and things like that going on as you swing through and explore. You also have subway systems and different underground areas that you can go to. It's so amazing. And then in this game, there is new areas that you're going to be able to go to, like Queens, which is where Peter is from, and the neighborhood in this residential area, which really felt so different in a good way and set itself apart from like the main hustle and bustle kind of feel that the city has, like Manhattan. I love that. I also loved what they did with the river and just adding more to the Hudson River and the area surrounding the islands of New York. And just with the activity around it, you have random people taking boats that are going up and down the river. You have all kinds of different buoys. And, you know, obviously it's lined up there for the player as a means of access across the river, because you're going to be crossing it back and forth quite often. And there was just a lot of different things there that they added to just kind of add character to those environments. So they just did an awesome job with the exterior of New York City. Now, Spider-Man, these games have also, they're known for having a lot of great interior environments as well, and the level of detail doesn't stop on the outside. When you get inside these environments and you're seeing all the details that are laid out, whether it's the interior of the sewers when you're hunting down the lizard, or these abandoned buildings that you're going through that Kraven has taken over, and it's an abandoned zoo, or even if there's different missions that you can go on when you're tracking down the flame, and it's these psychiatric hospitals that have been abandoned for years. It's just all these really cool places that you go to and that add just a certain level of detail and enrichment to them, and just kind of engagement with the player. I absolutely loved it. So from a visual standpoint, I mean, just Insomniac did an amazing job. There's nothing I can say bad about the visuals. As far as the sound, which we'll segue into next, I mean, the sound, first, I got to talk about voice acting. The voice acting in this game is, you know, right there at the very top. It's, you know, the upper echelon of voice acting. I feel like when I think of Miles Morales, this is the voice that is my Miles, if you will. A lot of times when I read comics and I'm reading Peter Parker per se, the voice I hear is that Peter Parker of the 90s cartoon. Well, that is how I feel about this Miles interpretation, the voice actor who does this character of Miles. Man, no knock on the Into the Spider-Verse movies. I love that as well. But this Miles, this is it. This is him for me. And Peter, it may not take over the 90s Peter Parker for me, but man, if he does not do an amazing job, there is just, even for both characters, there's a wide range of emotions that they have to go through over the course of this roller coaster ride of a game. And man, it is just awesome to see it. Harry does a phenomenal job. MJ, I mean, every character involved, the villains, I mean, just top to bottom, left to right. It is just an amazing job by the voice cast here. And I can't ask for anything better. I mean, there's no way, it's not possible to look for or ask for something better from the voice cast. Now, sound effects, if you played the other games, you'll know exactly what to expect. The thwip-thwip of the web swinging and the web shooting, all that sounds perfect and exactly like you would expect it to. The punches hit hard, the explosions, the Venom power moves with Miles. I mean, everything is there. It's just awesome. The music, the orchestral music is just phenomenal as always. The theme for Spider-Man, the theme for Peter, as well as for Miles, they each have their kind of own unique spin on the same theme. I love both of them, always have during the duration of this series. I mean, you really... sound just, you can't get any better. I mean, you literally cannot get any better. And overall, graphics and sound for Spider-Man 2, I mean, absolutely top of the top of the top of the cream of the crop. So that's my thoughts on graphics and sound. Now, let's go see what my thoughts were if you're playing using a 3D Pulse headset as opposed to just playing with sound from the TV or soundbar. Every review I do, I always do a comparison. If I'm playing on PS5, I'll do the 3D Pulse headset, which is what I use as my headset option on that console. Or if I'm playing on the Xbox, I now have the Starfield headset, and I'll talk about that and the differences between playing using a headset as opposed to just coming through the TV or a soundbar. Now, first off, let me just say that the sounds coming through the soundbar and TV, still great. I mean, the soundbar I have is a top-notch 5.1 LG soundbar, and I absolutely love it. I mean, the explosions hit well, the clarity is there, the, you know, theater immersion, the surround sound aspect, it's all there and it's great. The 3D Pulse headset, I will say, is a great option as well. I love that the ambient feeling that you get and the different sounds you pick up on as far as the directional sound effects and knowing where, you know, certain things are coming from, or if you're walking through an area that maybe you hear the drip of a drainage pipe or, you know, things that you wouldn't normally maybe pick up on from a TV, you could pick up on with the headset and that 3D spatial audio with the 3D Pulse. So great option for both, but I will say in this game's instance, I'm actually going to give the nod to playing without the headset. And the reason why is because of how awesome the sound effects are coming out of the speaker of the DualSense controller. I gotta say that I enjoyed playing, hearing those sounds more than I did the spatial audio and clarity that you get with the 3D Pulse. I'll go more into the details of the controller and stuff later on in the episode. But I got to tell you, the sounds that you hear, whether it's the thwip-thwip of web shooting, the crackle of a notification for a phone call, or especially my favorite, there is just one of the most amazing things I've ever heard come through a speaker on the PlayStation controller. Going all the way back to DualShock 4 has got to be Venom. When you are in kind of like a rage mode when you're playing with the black suit and all you hear coming through that speaker is, oh man, it may sound crazy the way I explained it, but I'm telling you, it just adds to the moment. And that is not something that you get when you're playing using the headset because it will only come through on the DualSense speaker. So there's a lot of really cool stuff that comes out of that controller speaker that you're not going to get when you use the headset. So in this situation, I would recommend playing without a headset as you're journeying through Spider-Man 2. Now, let's go find out what my thoughts were on those controls. Gamers, when picking up the DualSense controller to play Spider-Man 2, first off, when we talk about controls, I'm going to kind of go over the generic controls for you, and then I'll go into the specifics of what's new in this game as opposed to the last two in the series, and then just my thoughts in general on how the game felt as I played through it. Now, obviously, it's a third-person action game, so you're going to be controlling with the dual analog control scheme. Left analog is for the character, and right analog is for the camera. And when we look at the face buttons, the X button is going to be used for jumping. You can just kind of tap it to do a little very weak kind of a jump, or you can hold in the X button and kind of do a springboard jump, which is really nice and sets you up good if you're on street level to start web swinging and have that forward momentum going. So you don't have to actually like climb up on the walls or jump from a building to get that momentum. Circle and square really are kind of focused around combat. So square is going to be your attack button, punch, kick, whatever the combo dictates. And circle is going to be what you want to very much pay close attention to as far as dodging. Now, triangle is kind of a double function button as well. You could use it for your web strike, or one of my favorite new additions to the game is when you're in the air, you can press triangle to activate the web wings, if you will. Now, the analog sticks, going back to those, they are two different aspects that are used for those. You can click those analog sticks in to use them as buttons as well. Now, the left analog stick, or L3, when you are in the air, you can actually use that button to dive to help you to pick up momentum to then kind of really quickly pull up again and just kind of gain that speed when you are swinging through the city or flying through with your web wings. And you can also click it in when you're on top of rooftops and near the edges to perch on the side of those rooftops and just kind of overlook the city. Now, the right analog stick, when you click it in for R3, it'll actually show you the objectives and scan the environment that you're in. So it'll kind of send out that pulse to kind of, you know, show you what is highlighted is actually what you can interact with and whatnot. Now, when we look at the D-pad, if you're playing as Miles, up on the D-pad is actually utilized for his camouflage. He has a little camouflage meter, and then you press up and you have a short time window to be able to use it. That is activated by pressing up on the D-pad. Now, you can also use shortcuts to your discretion, which I actually really loved that Insomniac added this in here, to the right and left directions. And what I did, at least, I only really used the one. I chose to use the left direction, and I put photo mode on that because I have talked about it for years now. I prefer one button access to photo mode. So instead of having to press the share button on the PlayStation or go into the menu to bring up photo mode, I can just simply press left on the D-pad and boom, it's right there. So I appreciated having the shortcuts as an option. And then down on the D-pad is how you heal in the game. Now, looking at the top buttons, L1, R1, L2, R2. So L1 is going to be a new ability that Peter and Miles have in this game, which is to parry. Holding L1 is how you bring up your ability wheel, and you can choose which ability you'd like to use in a given moment. R1 is going to be for your web shooter. So if you're in the middle of a fight and you want to start webbing up enemies, you just tap the R1 button and you hold it to bring up your gadget wheel and then choose which gadget you'd like at that point. The L2 button is how you aim within the game or can zoom in if you're in more of a tightly wound corridor and you want to zoom in on some things in an office or see what the details are on something. You can sit there and hold in L2 and it'll come as zoom in a camera angle for you. And the R2 trigger is actually used for swinging and for parkour. So as you're swinging through the city, that is the one button or one trigger for swinging in this game, which is a big deal when the first Spider-Man came out. A lot of people loved the fact that Insomniac went with just a one trigger option as opposed to having each trigger be representative of a left and right hand of Peter and or Miles. Now, the touchpad, obviously we have that as the DualSense, and that is what brings up your map. And if you want to swipe the touchpad, it actually brings up the FNSM app and camera. Now, FNSM stands for Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. So that's the app where you get different side objectives and can do different street crimes and things like that. It just kind of gives you a little insight there. So that is the basic controls. Now, I will say, in implementation, what did I like or dislike about any of those scenarios the controls were used in? Well, I would say with random traversal and exploration within the city, I didn't have a whole lot of issue. I feel like the web swinging is just absolutely just euphoric. It's fun. It is just blissful as you're swinging through and that sense of speed. And I mean, just holding in the R trigger and holding X to then at the apex of a swing jump and then gain altitude. And in this game, adding that triangle button to allow you to access the web wings and then flying around. I mean, everything that is integrated into web swinging and traversal has been fine-tuned and I think is excellent. The only issue I had with traversal, to be honest with you, was with some collision detection and some directionality when trying to climb on walls. Now, obviously, he's Spider-Man. Whether it's Miles or Peter, you can climb on walls. The problem I had is sometimes with the transfer around corners of walls. So say if I get to a building's corner and I'm trying to go from the one flat surface that I'm on around to the other flat surface. There is many times where whoever Spider-Man it was, they would not transfer correctly. It's like the game would not know what to do. And you know, the character model would kind of start spasming. And I was like, what do I do? Well, that was kind of frustrating when you're sitting there trying to, you know, crawl along the side of a wall or even transfer from the wall to a ceiling. It happened to me a few times. And this can be very frustrating because there were times where the game would just disconnect me from whatever surface I was on. And that could be just crushing if you're trying to be like I am and be stealthy in certain scenarios in the indoor environments or even outdoor if you're trying to sneak around and take out all the enemies without being seen. That can get in the way. So outside of that, from a traversal standpoint, that was really the only blemish that I would say that I experienced, because even when you're walking around and you have the more narrative-driven scenarios where the camera pulls in tighter on the character model and you're doing these, you know, just kind of walking around, exploring the world and interacting with things in the environment, whether it's people or objects, and it's really more about progressing the story and sharing that story in those moments than it is really about gameplay. I didn't have any issues there. So from that standpoint, everything was pretty good, except for, like I said, the wall transfers and the corner transfers. Now, when it comes to just combat, I would say I love the combat. I can't say enough how fun the combat in this game is between the combo system. And when you get everything going and you really understand how to utilize everything and maximize, you know, your badassery is what I'll call it. When you combine the usage of your web shooters, your gadgets, your abilities, and just basic combos, I mean, it's a lot of fun. And I would say that was probably once I got to a point where I had all the abilities and all the gadgets that I wanted and they were, you know, leveling them up and increasing their the value that I got out of them. Man, it was a lot of fun. So the combat I thought was very fluid. I never really had a whole lot of issues with the combat. I felt like the targeting system was in place, the auto lock on for certain the enemies that you're closest to. Although I do prefer to have like a designated specific lock on to a specific enemy. If I had the option, that would have been preferable, but not a big deal at all. As far as accessing your gadgets and abilities, I thought that was great and fluid as well. And, you know, sometimes in some games, it can be very annoying when you're trying to access a gadget or ability wheel, in this case, the both of them in the middle of combat. And I didn't think that it was that difficult at all. And I didn't think that it hindered the experience of whatever fight I may have been in the given time. As far as map navigation, you know, the touchpad brings it right up. And then as you're scrolling through the map itself was pretty decent, but I've seen better world maps in games before and after Spider-Man 2. But as far as like the control and the moving around the map and trying to designate where I want to go or locating icons and, you know, navigating them and whatnot, the navigation itself wasn't bad. Navigating the menu systems weren't bad. And being able to upgrade abilities, purchase suits, all those kinds of things. Everything was pretty much the way you would expect it to be and not too cumbersome. So overall, I mean, I really didn't have any issues or negative things to say about the controls in this game. I thought that everything was well represented. And the default control scheme, I thought, fit the game well and didn't have any issues there. I just really hope that Insomniac continues to figure out ways to refine and fix the surface transfer of when you're crawling on walls, ceilings, and that kind of thing. But this game is obviously on a PS5, so I always do a segment called the DualSense Difference, which we'll do next, and share with you gamers what I felt made this game something different to play on the PS5. Or was there a difference at all? Could you have gotten the same experience by playing it on a PS4? Let's find out. As we talk about the difference playing a game on the PS5 using that DualSense controller, I'm looking at how big of an impact do the features of a DualSense impact a game experience. So the specific features of a DualSense range from obviously the adaptive triggers, that haptic feedback, and just the different type of vibrations that that controller uses, as well as a few other things that you can't get out of either a DualShock 4 or if it's a multi-platform game on an Xbox. And at the end of this segment, I will say whether I feel like there was a difference enough to say, hey, this is an experience that you can only have on PS5 using the DualSense, even if it was a multi-platform game or a multi-generational game, a la PS4, PS5. I know Spider-Man 2 is neither of those, but either way, I still wanted to call out some of the specific features of the DualSense and how they're used in this game. So when playing Spider-Man 2, the first thing that I have to mention was the absolute coolest thing I feel like I've ever experienced on a DualSense. And I know that there is a speaker on the DualShock 4, so this could be done on the DualShock 4, but I gotta say, I gotta mention it. It is what I had referenced earlier, the of Venom. His sound of anger and just pure rage coming through on that speaker was just awesome if you're in that rage mode in combat. So I absolutely love that. But Insomniac, they're just awesome at finding ways to utilize the features of the DualSense. They did it in the previous Spider-Man games, and they've done it again in this one. And even in Ratchet and Clank, they did an awesome job of figuring out how to exploit all the different features. So one thing that they've done awesome here is the adaptive triggers. And that's one thing that really sells the DualSense for me. It's an added layer of immersion, in my opinion. And in this game, the adaptive triggers, they really work as far as different tensions or levels of tension. If you don't know what I mean when I say adaptive triggers, the L2 and R2, those respond differently based on a given situation and the kind of intensity or tension that Insomniac or the developer wants the game to have in that moment. So in Spider-Man 2, there's different Sandman crystals that you can find throughout the course of your play as a side activity. And those, you have to basically mash in the L2 and R2 buttons in the way, and basically Miles or Peter, whoever Spider-Man you're playing as, will break open this crystal. And it's kind of like you're feeling that tension of breaking open the crystal. That was awesome. In addition to that, obviously there's a little pull here and there on the triggers when you're doing your web swinging and whatnot. But there's also a different mini game that you're playing as Miles. He has the kind of like an electric voltage type Venom ability list that he can use. And so those Venom abilities with kind of an electric charge and different ranges of charges, there is a mini game with one of his side activities where you have to kind of line up these meters together with two different columns, and you have to hold the trigger buttons a certain, whatever the designated spot is on screen. And while you're doing that, there's slight rumbling going on, plus the tensions on the triggers, and it just is awesome. So in addition to that, obviously more sound effects, you get the thwip thwip of web shooters as you're shooting those. And in general, there's different things that also happen to you when you're web swinging. There's different tensions on just the pull and going left or right. It's really, really awesome, the immersion level of the DualSense controller in this game. So is there a DualSense difference? Is there a different experience you'll have playing this game if it was in fact released on a different console or a different generation, a la PS4? Absolutely, I think that there is a DualSense difference with this game. I absolutely loved all the features that were exploited, and is yet another shining example of why the DualSense is arguably my favorite and the best controller on the market. Now that we've talked about controls and everything else, let's finally get to the details and my thoughts on the gameplay. Spider-Man 2's gameplay is full of variety. Obviously, as I mentioned, it is a third-person action-adventure game, but that doesn't mean that it is not filled with multiple aspects of other genres that are out there in gaming. So we're going to talk about all the different aspects that I can think of to really point out to you and let you know exactly what you're getting yourself into when booting up the game. Obviously, as it is a third-person action game, I want to talk about first what that means from an exploration standpoint within the game's world. So obviously, it's set in New York City, but there are different linear environments that you can go into as far as within buildings or other different locations, sewers, all kinds of stuff I've kind of referenced before earlier in the review. And honestly, it's pretty easy to get around in this game. There's multiple ways to do it. You can do it by foot. You can fly. You can web swing. I mean, there's just, you can slingshot yourself off the roof of a skyscraper. There's all kinds of different things and different ways to get around. Now, you know, obviously the least fun, I would say, of those is just kind of walking around New York City at a brisk pace or just at kind of like a little jogging speed. There are different moments where you are forced to walk at a certain slower pace. And that's really just, I would say, focused around main story or even some side quest moments where the game is kind of, you know, funneling you along in a certain area. But exploration in general, you have the open world, so to speak, of New York City to explore to your heart's content. And that means, you know, all the back alleys and bushy, underbrushed areas of Central Park and the neighborhoods of Queens that you could possibly think of that you want to peruse. I mean, there's just so much to see and do in this game. Personally, as far as the way to get around, web swinging is obviously going to be the go-to method. At least it was for me. And web swinging is pure fun, as it has been in all the Spider-Man games that Insomniac has done. So, of course, that helps make it a little bit easier to kind of be your go-to. But outside of web swinging, the newest addition to the gameplay is what I've referenced already. It's the web wings, and utilizing that in conjunction with your web swinging. And I just think that, man, it is amazing. It is everything I wanted it to be. You know, as I stated, it's what I look forward to. One of the things I look forward to most about this game was trying out the web wings and seeing how they were really utilized within the game. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. The fluidity between web swinging to web wings, back to web swinging, however you want to do it, zip lining from, you know, the spot you are within the air to a launching point on a roof surface, or trying to move around and maneuver as you're flying with the web wings into a an updraft that shoots you even higher into the air. I mean, it's just awesome how you can get around in this place. And those updrafts keep you elevated long enough to keep you flying longer. And then you can also look for jet streams that are more linear paths that are all throughout the different spots within New York City. And there are different ones that allow you to kind of traverse over the river as well to get from one borough to another a lot quicker. Now, the zip points that I talk about, those are awesome as well. You can kind of, you either slow down time and zip to them, or you can just kind of do them in real time. And it's just, it's very euphoric to me. Just the combination of all these things when you're really just implementing everything you got going on. And then Insomniac, of course, adds a little bit of fun factor to it. And if you're way up high in the air, you're just kind of free falling. You can move the analog stick around and whatnot and just do different poses and pull out the cell phone and check that. It's just really cool. Just fun stuff that Spider-Man would have actually really done probably in those moments. So I absolutely loved exploration in these moments. I loved it also in the more linear moments when you're going through interior environments and you can investigate and examine different items that are interactable in the environment, and you're just kind of scanning areas and finding different clues. There's different moments where you can use a picture. You swipe up on the touchpad and Peter pulls out a camera and you can take pictures and also sense different things that you're looking for as far as signatures of heat or whatnot. I just absolutely loved all these different things. And it's not just one type of gameplay or exploration either. There is, you know, you're more action oriented where you're going through and you can just kind of go in there and just go ham on people and fight. But there are more, most of the time you're given the option, stealth or just kind of go in guns blazing. But there are other moments where you're required to be stealthy, and those are story-driven and more narrative-focused than others. And there's a lot of these that were throughout the game, and I loved it. And, you know, I'm going to talk now, speaking of those or some of these stealth-oriented areas in the game, the controversial MJ moments throughout the course of the game. I know a lot of people may not have liked these. I personally love them. There were three different moments throughout the course of the game you get to play as MJ. And I know some people felt like she was overpowered as far as the taser that you can use as her means of defense. I didn't feel like that she was overpowered at all. I'm sorry. You know, it's a video game, guys. Like, you know, there's certain things that you got to take liberties with, and it's about being fun at a certain point, or after a certain point, I should say. So I feel like they're just kind of being a little bit too critical, but to each their own. I personally loved the MJ missions, and these were very much stealth driven, and you had to be stealthy. And just the taser gun was a way to either run up on enemies and take them out with a stealth takedown. Further on, as you got in, some of the more later MJ missions had you using it as in the means of, like, you would a gun, if you will, if you want to shoot a taser at someone. But I absolutely loved those gameplay segments. And I also loved those slower linear segments. So, all around, they were just absolutely extremely well done and a lot of fun and just a lot of variation to them. Now, when it comes to the different kind of combat that you can experience as you're going through these areas, I love the combat as well. I mean, you know, I'm gonna bring stealth takedowns and the stealth aspects of going through an environment with Spidey as part of the combat section here. And I'm gonna talk about that first because I always do stealth first in any game that I play. And that's the way I approach Spider-Man as well. There's all kinds of different variations. If you played the other games, then you know what I'm talking about. But if you haven't played either of the previous Spider-Man games, there is different ways where you can come down off of a web and hang from the ceiling and do a ceiling takedown. You can be perched on a lamppost or the corner of a building and do a stealth takedown, which will have, you know, the Spider-Man thwip a web to towards the enemy and yank them towards him and web them up against the surface that you're on. And you can also do web strike takedowns, which, you know, you press triangle on the DualSense and Spidey will zip right over and kind of do a one-hit knockout. But that makes a lot of noise. So if you have enemies that are nearby, they will be distracted and come over and you have blown your cover basically. Now, there are other ways to get around that. There is, thankfully, you can click in the analog stick and it kind of sends out this pulse that I was talking about earlier, where Peter can sense things, see interactable objects in the environment, but also there is an indicator. It'll tell you whether it's safe or dangerous to attack or try to subdue an enemy at a given point in time. Meaning, if there are other enemies in the vicinity that can see or hear what you're thinking of doing, hey, it's going to show danger. But if there's nobody around or they won't see or hear you, then it'll show safe. So I definitely appreciated those. And I mean, you can even also on foot, speaking of being on foot, you can also creep and kind of tiptoe up to the back of someone and take them down that way as well, kind of old school in that way. But I love the stealth moments in this game, and I thought they were great. You can also use distractions to lure enemies to locations that you want to have them more vulnerable. You can web shoot different barrels or different electric boxes that are in the environment, things like that that will lure them to that location. You can only do it so many times, though, before they'll kind of get the idea of the location of where you're at and pinpoint your location, then your cover is blown anyways. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Miles has an extra means of getting away or going unseen that Peter does not. He can actually turn invisible for a brief amount of time. So you can press up on the D-pad and Miles will go invisible, and that'll allow him to get away pretty quickly or to move around unseen for however long you may seem necessary. Outside of this, the combat itself is basically all modeled around combos, just melee combos, whether it's punch, kick, as well as integrating the use of gadgets and special abilities. And the gadgets are great. I mean, they're things that can, you know, there's a device that you throw out and it sends cables out that draws in all enemies nearby, or there's concussion grenades, or just all, you know, all kinds of different things that you can use at your disposal that are really, really helpful. Some things are more specific for a singular enemy. Other things can be a lot more helpful with a group of enemies that are surrounding you. Same thing with your abilities. Your abilities can range whether it's the Venom abilities and the evolved Venom abilities that you can get with Miles and the Venom punches and electric strikes and things like that. Or with Peter, there are different things that he gets as well. Usually those are more around his robotics that he has in this game, like the robotic legs of a spider that pop out of his back. You can usually use those to kind of like a cyclonic dart forward, or you can also just, I mean, get a ton of punches in with those legs really quick. I mean, there's just all kinds of different abilities tied to that. And then when you eventually get to the black suit, because I know you all know that the black suit is in here, you do have it has its own set of abilities that you can pull from as well. So there's just a lot of different options for you when it comes to combat. And when you integrate those and implement those all together, it just feels great when you're in that combat scenario, any combat scenario. Now, when it comes to using these abilities and gadgets and things like that, and just in general, the characters of Peter and Miles, there are some RPG elements to the game, as it was in the previous two, where you can, as you complete quests and move forward in the story and find collectibles and things like that, you earn XP, which gains a level for every single time you do. And as you level up, you earn ability points, and you can apply those ability points to the abilities. Both Peter and Miles have their own separate ability skill trees, as well as a combined skill tree. So I thought that was interesting that there was three different skill trees for the game, and they all were actually very interesting, except honestly, Miles. I didn't really feel like Miles had a very interesting skill set to me, so I didn't really upgrade a lot of his stuff towards the end after I had already done their combined skill tree as well as Peter's skill tree. So not to say that I was bored or didn't have fun with Miles, but the abilities that were there and the things that the upgrades did if you purchased the abilities upgrade, it wasn't something that I was going to use or felt was really relevant to me. So outside of that, and that's not a bad thing or anything, it's just kind of just my play style is what I would say. So based on your play style, it may be very different for you. Now, outside of exploration, combat, and the upgrade system, there are a lot of great side activities that you can expect to do and find in this game world, and I absolutely loved each and every one of them. Now, I did have some favorites over others, but overall, I thought they were great. You know, I mentioned earlier the Sandman crystals. I had mentioned the flame, the cult, and that whole storyline. So there is a ton of great side activities. There is some spider bots that are kind of your run-of-the-mill collectible that spread throughout the game world that you can find a ton of those. And there's actually a pretty interesting story, though, that kind of tops that off. So the thing that I loved about the collectibles and the side activities in this game is it was one of those few games. I feel like more and more do it now, which is great. But the collectibles and the side activities actually had what I considered a good payoff in the end. Sometimes, you know, it just feels like fetch quests, or you're just collecting, adding to a number, a counter, if you will, in an in-game menu. And that's not the case here at all. I mean, each one of them had some kind of, like the spider bots even, those are the most quantity of a collectible in the game, but yet each one of them, they kind of all look cool. I looked and examined and rotated each one of them. You can zoom in, zoom out, whatnot, and rotate. I looked at them all, thought they were pretty cool and what they were representing, as well as like a little tiny description of each one. And then as you progressed and the more you got, say you would get a bunch of, you know, six of them, and Genki would communicate with you an update on what his investigation was and what he had found so far about where these bots are coming from. And that was consistent throughout the course of finding the spider bots. And then, as I said, there is a nice little payoff in the end. So I thoroughly enjoyed that. So just, I mean, it's a great breadth of stuff to do within this game. And every aspect of the game has been really fine-tuned. The only thing that I really had issues with is what I had mentioned in the controls, and that was more of what I considered a specific control issue than anything else, which was the transference from ceiling to wall and vice versa. Some surfaces, I felt it was just difficult. So outside of all that, I mean, the gameplay on tap here, if you like fun action-adventure, RPG-style, building a character kind of game, then this is the game for you. If you like Spider-Man, I mean, oh, especially if you're a fan of the comics and any of the movies and the TV shows over the years, I mean, just like the last two Spider-Man games, both Spider-Men have a massive collection of suits that you can unlock, whether it's by completing collectible or side activities or just progressing through the main story of the game. You know, you'll unlock certain suits doing that. I mean, there's just a lot of really cool stuff here that you can unlock and play around with. And I absolutely loved it. So that is my thoughts on the gameplay of Spider-Man 2. Now let's go see what my thoughts were on the game's photo mode. As far as the photo mode in Spider-Man 2 is concerned, I'll just say right out the gate that this game's photo mode is exactly what I look for in any game that has a photo mode. From a feature standpoint, from the initial getting into the photo mode standpoint, everything that I could ever possibly want is here in this game's photo mode. So what does that mean? Well, when I talk about a game's photo mode, first off, the thing that I look for is how easy is it to get into the game's photo mode. I prefer a one-step process to get into it. So as opposed to pausing the game and going through a menu to select photo mode, I'd rather just kind of click in the two analog sticks, a la Assassin's Creed. Or in this game's case, as I had mentioned earlier, you can apply shortcuts to the D-pad. So for me, it ended up being a one-step process to get into the photo mode. So that check mark. Now, once you get in there, what is the ease of navigation and control over the camera? Because let's be honest, in any photo mode, there's a lot of times where you really want to set up that perfect angle. How much control does Insomniac give you? Well, I thought it was perfect. From the zoom in and out options, the elevation options, whether it's the 360 degree movement of the camera. Some games you'll get stuck on invisible barriers, and I hate that when I'm trying to line up a shot and all of a sudden this invisible barrier is blocking me from rotating to the point that I want to be at. Spider-Man 2 does not do that. I had full range of motion in any screenshot that I wanted to take, and every option that you could want that I've listed as far as camera control is there. Now, you also have different blur effects and all kinds of different picture options. There are many different things you can do when it comes to those different camera options. Now, when you move forward and you look at what the different features are, when we talk about borders and frames and things like that, man, Insomniac does it better than anybody else. I'll be honest with you, because if you've played these Spider-Man games before, you'll know that they have comic book covers and all kinds of different really cool thematic frames and just making it look like Peter is holding or Miles is holding the cell phone and it's a selfie and the picture is right there lined up within their cell phone picture, literal picture frames. It's just all kinds of really cool stuff they have as far as the frames are concerned. And then when it comes to filters, there are some pretty cool filters in here. There's noir, there is, you know, your basic, just different standard color options that you get in most games' photo modes. The really cool thing that I love about this game is the addition of stickers. And Cyberpunk 2077 did this for its photo mode, and I love it. I really wish that every game would get to a point where they use stickers, because the level of detail that you can go to with these stickers in Spider-Man 2 and other games, but here with Spider-Man 2, it's awesome. So if you really want to set up a comic book panel and have the word bubbles and actually add text and put those into the word bubbles, you can do that with the stickers, because the stickers, you can choose what location of the photo that you want the location to be. You also can choose the size, so you can increase or decrease the size and width of the sticker that you're use. So there is just a ton of options here, and they got some really cool stickers, some fun ones, some cool ones. Like I said, you can actually make your own comic book cover with just these stickers. You don't have to use the frames that Insomniac provides if you don't want to. There was a couple of instances where I kind of created my own comic book cover using just the stickers, and it was just a lot of fun. So outside of that, the other big thing I got to talk about here, there is the lighting and the level of detail that Insomniac allows you to get to with the lighting, because you can use either kind of like a strobe light or a spotlight, and then you can choose the circumference of the location you want it to focus on, the level of intensity of that light, the color of that light, the intensity of the color. I mean, there's just so many details that you can do with just the coloring here of the light. And I loved it. There was a lot of really cool shots that I was able to pull off that if it wasn't for me being able to manipulate the lighting in that way, in my opinion, they wouldn't have come out as cool as they were. So awesome job with that. The other big thing I always look for is, does the game have emotes for the character, poses, those kinds of things? And man, Spider-Man 2 is full of them. There's a lot of really fun poses and emotes that you can do with the characters and kind of set up some really cool scenes. A lot of funny scenes, to be honest with you, more than anything, in my opinion. But definitely some really good stuff here. It is right up there. I mean, arguably the best photo mode out there. I mean, it's right up there with the other Spider-Man games. And again, I mentioned Cyberpunk 2077. In my opinion, those are the cream of the crop. That is what every game's photo mode should aspire to be, in my opinion. So when it comes to the game's photo mode, I gotta say, this is just an absolute masterpiece as far as the ranking is concerned when it comes to what I look for out of enjoying photo modes. So now let's go check out the ship's chronometer and find out how long it took me to beat the game, as well as find out how long it may take you to beat the game based on your playstyle. As we look at the ship's chronometer, there's three different times that I want to discuss in this segment. And the first is, how long did it take me to beat Spider-Man 2? Well, let me first just say that I did get the Platinum Trophy in the game. So I got all trophies unlocked, Platinum Trophy, and did everything in this game that there is to see and do. Now, to do that, and spending a lot of time in photo mode, it took me pretty much right on the money of 40 hours. Now, that was kind of surprising to me because, you know, Miles Morales, I expected that to be a shorter experience because it was advertised as, you know, not a full-fledged sequel or a full-fledged experience as big as the first game was. And that game took me right around 20 hours for my first playthrough for everything. But the first Spider-Man game took me a considerable amount longer than what this game did, which, you know, looking at full-fledged game to full-fledged game, quote-unquote, you know, per Insomniac's words, it's like, man, I'm surprised that this game took me that much less to complete than the first Spider-Man game. But regardless, I'm not mad at it because I felt like the 40 hours that I spent in the game was the perfect amount. I feel like if it had been any longer than that, not that I would have gotten bored per se, but I just, there is something about it. It just felt right. Like it felt like, okay, you know, that was kind of like the perfect length for this game. So 40 hours for me to get the Platinum Trophy. And if you're looking to just play through the game and see the story and experience that, I would say you could probably beat the game in half that time. If you're not really worried about side activities or, you know, random street crimes or playing around in photo mode, you're just here strictly for the story, you can probably start to finish the game in about 20 hours. Now, if you are, again, a completionist, you're probably going to be right in line with where I am. I know a good friend of the show, Graveyard Gamer from the Graveyard Gamer podcast. Check out his show right here on Spotify and many other podcast platforms. If you like my show, you'll love his, I promise you. But according to him and his conversation with me, he finished the game somewhere between 35 to 37 hours. So we were pretty much right there in the same ballpark. So I'm thinking that you're probably going to spend 35 to 40 hours if you're like the two of us. And you're going after that Platinum Trophy and have that completionist mindset when playing this game. So that's the ship's chronometer for this game. Now let's go find out what my final thoughts and review score are. As I sit here looking back on my time with Spider-Man 2 and I reflect on the 40 hours that I spent within the game, I'm going to start first with my final thoughts on the negative side of things and get that out of the way. And the only really negative things I have to say about the game, I mentioned it a few times throughout the course of the review, is really that transference from ceiling to wall, from wall to ceiling. And I really want Insomniac to kind of figure that out. There were a few glitches that I had throughout the game. There were some clipping issues. There was some game crashes that I had. And not just once or twice. The game did crash on me about 5 times over the course of that 40 hours, which is pretty extravagant, to be honest with you, with a AAA title like that. So it was kind of surprising the amount of times that the game crashed. So when you look at some of the technical issues that the game launched with, and I understand there's patches and there's continued to be patches and things like that, but my experience is what I'm reviewing here and the time that I played it. So when you take those things into consideration, the only other things that I would really speak to is the fact that as many new things that they've added to this game, I still felt that there was a level of familiarity with this game as far as what I've played in the last 2 Spider-Man games. Now, you know, don't get me wrong, that familiarity, I mean, what's familiar is amazing. You know, it's amazing stuff and gameplay that Insomniac has got going on here. They found their niche and it's really, really good for these games. But there still is that feeling of like, man, I've been here, done that in a way. So again, it didn't destroy the game's experience for me overall, but it is worth noting in my opinion and my final thoughts here and in my consideration of what my experience is being rated here. So outside of those things, now we can move into the positives. And man, they are what seem like near endless in this experience that I had with this game. So, I mean, the story is absolutely phenomenal. These characters were written expertly. They were acted expertly. The story itself from start to finish, character arcs, just the progression of the plot, the subplots, everything that was going on in this game was absolutely interesting to me. It was so engaging. It was so emotional. And I absolutely loved it. I said it before, I'll say it again. It is one of the best Spider-Man stories I have ever experienced in any medium. So that goes a long way for me. Now, when you look at everything else, I mean, the graphics are top of the line. The visuals in this game are just amazing. Again, you know, there's a few things here or there that I could consider, but I'm not really going to harp on those. I would just say overall, between facial animations and the lip syncing and just body animations, you know, swinging around and doing all kinds of flips and just the web poses that the Spider-Men do. I mean, those have to be animated by game developers, right? And they do an awesome job of getting those, you know, those different poses and things down as far as from the animation standpoint. So the visual side of things, top notch. Sound, I mean, the music, the soundtrack, the voice acting, everything is above par, well above par. I mean, it's just amazing what they've done with this game. The controls, you know, everything I feel like the top to bottom is pretty much where it needs to be for this game. And I would say all the new things that they've added to this game too have been just a great addition to the series as far as the web wings, the slingshotting on top of the rooftops, just different things they've done with abilities and gadgets and the way they've implemented them, the black suit and things like that. So they did an amazing job, Insomniac did overall with the game. But outside of the minor things at the beginning, all the positives, everything rolled up into one, leads me to a final score of a 9.25 out of 10. That'll do it for my review of Spider-Man 2. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as searching for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media on Threads and Instagram at Lost at Sea Gaming, as well as on X at Lost at Sea, GAMIN, 1. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.